Welcome to this podcast from Neurogastroenterology and Motility. It publishes original research and topical reviews on basic and clinical aspects of gastrointestinal sensation and motility, as well as brain-gut interactions.
So welcome everyone to this month's podcast from Neurogastroenterology and Motility. I'm Adam Farmer and I'm a gastroenterologist at the Wingate Institute in London. This month it's my real pleasure and honour to welcome Professor Lynn Chang. Lynn is a Professor of Gastroenterology and Co-Director of the Centre of Neurobiology of Stress at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. She also serves on the board of directors of the Rome Foundation and is the current president of the American Neurogastroenterology and Motility Society. So Lynn, many thanks for joining us this month on the podcast, and congratulations to you and your co-authors on your paper entitled Genome-Wide DNA Methylation Profiling of Peripheral Blood Mononuclear Cells in Irritable Bowel Syndrome. So Lynn, could you give me some background regarding the role of stress in IBS? Where's the field at the moment?
Well, first I want to thank you, Adam, very much for taking the time to discuss our paper for this podcast, which I think is a great resource for neurogastroenterology readers. So stress is an area that I've been studying for a while, and its role in irritable bowel syndrome or IBS. And in general, IBS is considered a stress-sensitive disorder. So studies have shown that chronic stress can be associated with the onset and the symptom exacerbation of IBS. This has been shown in IBS in general and also in post-infectious IBS, which is a subtype of IBS. And there's evidence, and this is one of the areas I've been studying as well, is that early adverse childhood experiences or early adverse life events is associated with many different conditions, but IBS is one of them, and that includes different types of abuse, mental illness of the parent, death of a parent, incarcerated household member. So IBS patients have been shown in various studies to have a hyper-responsiveness to stress. There's also rodent and human studies that have shown that corticotropin-releasing factor, which is a main stress hormone, is that where they have hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis pathways and non-HPA axis pathways that are involved in the pathogenesis of IBS, and really affects central and peripheral pathways and brain gut interactions that leads to alterations in central arousal circuits and changes in GI function, such as secretion, perception, sensation, motility.
So stress obviously is therefore a key component of the pathophysiology in IBS, but how can stress cause epigenetic changes that can lead to change in function?
Yeah, epigenetic factors are known because they affect how genes are expressed without changing the actual genetic sequence. One of the most prevalent epigenetic marks changes are these methyl chemical groups that tag onto DNA at CpG sites. And when it happens at the regulatory region of the gene, it can silence the gene and then affect gene expression. So we haven't really found particular genes that are associated with a great variance of the IBS phenotype. So because this is a complex disorder, it's heterogeneous, there's different clinical traits, so it's probably gene expression that is different, and that's why you have this kind of a great variability in a complex disorder. So behavioral epigenetics is really the field of study where you examine the role of epigenetics, which links gene and environmental interactions, and then affects behavior, and we know that environment is important in IBS. So this has really emerged as an experimental science. There's two studies I want to briefly just tell you about that are relevant to IBS, or at least to animal models that are relevant to IBS. So Michael Meany and his colleagues have this early life stress rodent model, and they found that they had a stress hyper-responsiveness, and they linked it to DNA methylation at the glucocorticoid receptor promoter region in the hippocampus. And the glucocorticoid receptor is important for negative feedback. So this glucocorticoid receptor, when it was methylated, it was silenced, so there's decreased expression. There wasn't enough negative feedback, and these rodents had this hyper-responsive stress system. And then John Wiley and his colleagues had a recent study where they also linked chronic stress to DNA methylation changes that affect this glucocorticoid receptor promoter region and decrease expression. Also, same thing with the cannabinoid receptor as well in the dorsal root ganglion area, and also found that there was histone acetylation of the TRPV1 gene, and that led to increased expression, and that's all been linked to visceral pain perception that could be enhanced in these animals.
So that leads very nicely into the question of what were the aims of your study as you embarked on this project?
Well, since epigenetic modifications are thought to link early life stress to later susceptibility to disorders like IBS, we had three aims. One was to determine genome-wide DNA methylation differences in the peripheral blood mononuclear cells, or we call PBMCs, in IBS patients and healthy controls using methylation arrays. The global methylation study was a pilot study, so our second aim was to validate some of these findings using a more robust and reliable technique, which is called bisulfite sequencing. And our third aim was to determine the effect of DNA methylation on gene expression, known as epigenetic silencing, and to see if there was any association with clinical characteristics and comorbidities, including biohabit, including early life stress, anxiety, depression, and just the severity of IBS.
So what was your study population that you looked at, and what methods did you use to get your results?
So we recruited 27 IBS patients, 60%, almost 60% were women. They had different biohabit subtypes, and then we all recruited age and sex-matched healthy controls. But I will tell you that these subjects were recruited from the community predominantly, so they were a tertiary care population. Most of them did not have any psychiatric comorbidity or psychotropic medications. A few of them were. So we just obtained blood samples, isolated the PBMCs, and we measured DNA methylation using the Illumina human methylation 450K array. And our representative methylation differences were confirmed by bisulfite sequencing. So when we did the DNA methylation microarray, we only did 12 IBS patients and 12 healthy controls, but in the larger group of subjects, we did the bisulfite sequencing and also correlated with clinical traits. And then we did some pathway analysis to determine potential pathways associated with these genes.
So what were your key results?
Well, when we did the genome-wide scan, we detected 133 differentially methylated sites in these 12 IBS patients compared to the 12 controls. And then we did the gene ontology analysis as well. After we did bisulfite sequencing, we picked four particular genes, and they were involved in the detoxification, oxidative stress, and neuronal genes. So there was the glutathione S transferase, so the GSTM5, the SCO spondin, or SSPO, which is secreted by a subcommissural organ in the brain, and the TPP gene, which is the tubulin polymerization promoting protein. That's a protein that's in Lewy bodies that they find in Parkinson's. There was one other gene, the SNCAP, SNCAIP for the sinophilin 1, which is also been associated with Parkinson's disease, but we weren't able to do the sequencing, so we weren't able to confirm that. But we basically found that the methylation was confirmed by this bisulfite sequencing. And then we also found that the GSTM5 methylation was also associated with a decreased expression, which is what you would expect, PBMCs. But one of the main pathways that came out in all these pathway analysis was actually oxidative stress, and that may be altered in IBS. And that's actually been shown in chronic fatigue syndrome, which is associated with IBS.
So do you think that's the key factor here in interpreting these results in the context of stress, certainly in my clinical practice, as either an initiating or an exacerbating factor in IBS?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to say in IBS because I think it's probably different in different individuals. But it looks like, at least based on this study, and this is just in the blood, what we really need to do is get into the colon because we know that these epigenetic changes are tissue specific, but it looks like that there are, that DNA methylation or epigenetic changes do occur, and that it can alter gene expression. It looks like these neuropeptide or these neuropathic pathways are affected. It's hard to make a lot of from the peripheral blood mononuclear cells, although we do know that a lot of these immune cells in the blood, they pass through the gut, so they can represent what's going on in the gut as well, and potentially, you know, going to the brain as well, because this is a brain-gut disorder. So I think we need more studies.
So although I appreciate this was an exploratory study, did you find any epigenetic differences in either IBS subtype or by gender at all?
Yeah, well, actually, you know what? It wasn't really designed, or the sample size wasn't enough to look at that. But so we didn't find any gender. I did try, as you know, try to recruit both men and women. So I think we need more studies for that. We did find that the GSTM5 was more related to the IBS constipation subtype. And also another interesting finding when we did the pathway analysis, there was another pathway of the neuropeptide hormone, and PACAP is the main hormone, and that's homologous to VIP, or vasoactive intestinal peptide, and that was hypomethylated, so you expect that gene would be upregulated. And there are studies that have shown that VIP is upregulated in the serum in the blood in IBS diarrhea group, and we did find that find this in the IBSD group. So more studies would be helpful to determine if that's an important gene regulating in IBS.
What do you think were the limitations, therefore, of your study was?
I definitely think it was sample size. This is really an expensive study. What we're planning to do, and we recently got an NIH grant based on this preliminary data to do global methylation PBMCs in a much larger group of IBS patients and controls. And we're also going to do methylation studies in the colon in IBS patients and controls as well. So we'll hopefully get more information in our future studies. But, you know, hopefully we can find targets for where you can alter methylation and you know, be a therapeutic in IBS patients. We know that diet, antidepressants can alter methylation, and we know that diet and antidepressants can be helpful in IBS. Whether this is going to be through a epigenetic mechanism, we'll have to find out, but some animal models are suggesting that that can happen.
And do you think epigenetics could offer us new pathophysiological insights into this disorder as well?
Definitely. I mean, this is really one of the main purposes of this. You know, we've all tried to look at candidate genes, and it has been highly successful. I think you have to use these unbiased techniques to determine if there's some novel pathways. It sounds like a fishing expedition, but I do think that we have to do some of this to open up the field and look at some novel pathways. So hopefully this will lead to potential insights, pathophysiologically speaking, and also therapeutically.
And my feeling as well is that it can potentially allow us to homogeneize our patient population in future studies. Where do you think the knowledge gaps lie in the field at the moment, and how do we go about really trying to resolve these moving forward?
I think you made a really good point. Since this is a heterogeneous population, we do have to identify clusters of more homogeneous patients and determine what are the pathophysiologic mechanisms that are driving that particular subtype or subgroup. And it's not going to be just biohabit. I'm sure there's going to be different characteristics. And finding what biologic mechanisms are important, and then determining based on that what therapies that group would particularly respond to. But to do that, we really need large groups of patients and investigators working together collaboratively to find biomarkers, not only for diagnosis for these different phenotypic subgroups, but also to predict treatment response.
Absolutely. And with that, I'd sincerely like to thank you and your co-authors for a really excellent paper, and also assisting in this month's podcast, and also our listeners for tuning in. And I look forward to welcoming you all again on another installment of the podcast next month.
Thank you so much.
Further information about this paper can be found on the journal website. We hope that you have enjoyed this podcast, and we look forward to welcoming you to next month's edition.